103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
It's another Friday afternoon, and in my company on today's Sod Show Garden Podcast is
Karen O'Donoghue from GIY.
Karen, how do I say it? What's the easiest way? I won't ask you what you do for a living because I know that you work for GIY. That's Grow It Yourself International now, formerly Grow It Yourself Ireland. Still Ireland, but you know yourself, it's the way it goes. I guess the easiest way is to go backtrack, and the Sod Show bingo is always, I used to grow plants under my bed when I was 5. I studied horticulture, Donegan Landscaping, Sod Show bingo complete. You woke up one day and said, Daddy, I don't want to be a princess. I want to I want to get compost under my slightly manicured nails. Give me the journey.
Well, I can tell you for starters, I never, ever wanted to be a princess. But that's beside the point. I took the scenic route, to be fair, to this time and place. Started off with great ideals of, you know, practicing law when I was full of vim and vigour. But eventually realised that I was better at breaking it than I was at keeping it. So finally I went to Bristol where I did a master's in health promotion. And it was there while studying for physical activity, nutrition and good old public health that I came across permaculture. And it was whilst I was doing that course back over in good old Bristol that I was introduced to GIY. I can't remember how, I can't remember where, but I'm very glad I did.
Okay. Two things you said, for those who are, let's say, maybe going to or have done, spent the weekend at the Spirit of Folk Music Festival till the wee hours dancing, or badly, possibly. What is permaculture, one of the words that you noted?
So this is not going to be the dictionary definition of it by any means.
Exactly.
Okay, this is going to be what I took from a fantastic course in Bristol as a real intro to people who have no clue and how they're going to get going about it. So permaculture for me is a different approach to growing and actually a different approach to living. So instead of it all being on a take basis and how can I get as much as I possibly can out of this piece of land or this person or this way of being, it's about being a little bit more mindful and having a bit of cop on about how we go about things. So from a growing perspective, it's about, yes, making the best of what you have. So whether it's the space that you have, the light that you have, the amount of shade, the level of resources that you have available to you, the quality of your soil, being really clever and going a little bit back to basics about, you know, things that you probably know more about, Peter, than I do, like companion planting, etc.
Well, I know we were down talking to the head grower and the purchasing manager for the Amber Springs Hotel and inside one of the Palatine tunnels. So I hope this goes by some way to explain. But they had rows and rows of tomatoes, as you would see in any Palatine tunnel. And on the far right-hand side, you had strips of what was about to be rocket and lettuce and salad leaves. In the middle, they had one bed of rocket that was allowed to go to bolt, to seed that is, as versus producing the fresher leaves entirely for you, exactly as Karen was explaining. And they suggested that it was to attract in the beneficial bugs which would cure the pests and diseases of the tomato plants by its own very nature of having those bugs allowed in, as versus keeping it clinically clean. Does that explain what you were trying to say?
That's basically what he said. Yeah, that's my answer.
Wow, I am... I am the El Guapo. That is good. Okay. Right. So we now know what permaculture is. When people filled in their leaving cert results thing, unknowns to most of you, mine would have been number one, horticulture, and number two was German and business studies. Yeah, total extremes. Yours was, obviously, I gather, a little bit on the law side, but answer me that part one, but then... How on God's earth do you end up figuring out that there's a course in Bristol doing something that's very long to remember?
Yeah, something that's really long to remember, but it was absolutely brilliant fun doing it and quite definitely one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. So being really honest, when I was doing my leaving cert and I was full on student mode. What I really wanted to do was study medicine. That was absolutely my goal. And did not get the points. It's as simple as that. Got points for law instead, as you do. So went to UL and did the degree there. And again, great time, made my best mates, all that kind of stuff. But it wasn't my thing. It wasn't my vocation. So fast forward 10 years in between, there was all sorts of shenanigans in life and career and jobs and experience. And I was at that point going, what on earth am I going to do? I know I haven't achieved what I meant to achieve. I know I haven't applied myself the way I meant to apply myself. And so I hit Google. Just sat down in front of a computer and just Googled all the keywords that I thought were things that really got me going, that I really liked to do, that I had a passion for. No idea that health promotion was something I could study. No idea that health promotion was what I see all around me, you know, in terms of how to eat five a day, less salt, eat brown bread, all that kind of stuff. And up it came, health promotion at the University of Bristol. Sent in an application, very nervous going back as a mature student. Rocked it, nailed it, loved it.
You say mature. I wouldn't consider myself very mature at the best of times. Don't get me wrong, I take my work very seriously, but like once gardens have been made, then it's time for goofing around, as I would say to my five-year-old princess, pardon that, Ella, right, which is let's do pretend falling down and let the rain tickle your tongue, which is to my delight, but not everybody else's. Has to clean up the freaking mess afterwards. When you say mature, was it in the head sense? Because I kind of got her a bit, you know, like me pretending that I didn't take that tractor that had no keys in it when I was in college. I kind of gather that you maybe had a little bit of divilment in you. Is that a fair synopsis?
Divilment? Moi? Oh my God, Peter, we've only known each other for what, about 3.5 minutes now, and already you have me well sus, dude.
This That's relationship outstanding. Is moving faster than I anticipated myself, you know?
Yes, let it be said, I was known for a little bit of ducking and diving, a little bit of moving and here and there and around the place, all in good fun, never any badness intended, but I'd say what I had never found was my groove.
Okay.
I'd never found my groove, and it was when I went to Bristol and I grew up in lots of different ways that I totally found my groove.
Yeah, I've had them experiences as well. Okay, well, we move swiftly on past my long-haired... Why did Peter never buy those pair of jeans? Because he met a woman in Clonmel and got thrown out of a nightclub. It's a very long story. We'll swiftly move on past all them. You come back from Bristol.
Yeah.
You move back to where?
So I moved back to a little village called Ladysbridge, which is in East Cork.
Know it well.
You know it well?
I know it very well. Yeah.
Okay, how?
That's well, you're not holding the microphone, okay. I am, so let's stick with you.
Technically, Brian is holding the microphone.
Well, technically, if that's the way it is, so you know, I can edit it up afterwards, and I'll make that sound all very wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay. Back to it. You end up back in East Cork. What happens then? You come home, it's a Monday, Friday, Thursday, Wednesday, fictitious day of the week.
Okay.
And you find a home, four walls, roof, front door, and a key, and a car, and you go...
Boom.
What happens next?
Yeah. Okay, so I arrived home with a plan of action. That plan needed to change. So I was in Ladysbridge with a lot of blessings, including two... beautiful little children, Dylan and Saoirse, in a village that I knew had lots of potential, but it wasn't really quite achieving it in some ways. Whilst there were some really well-established community initiatives like Tidy Towns and some of the really traditional things like, you know, GAA and, of course, Mass and the local pub, I just had a sense that it certainly wasn't doing it for me, and therefore it wasn't going to be doing it for a number of other people. And I also knew that there was a lot of talent in the village and in the surrounding areas that had just no avenue. So on a bit of a wing and a prayer... I was lucky enough to own a little bit of land with an old cottage on it with my mom. Hi, mom. And we decided...
This is as close as she's getting to the Late Late Show.
Yeah, that is very true. And we decided that we would just set up something called the Cottage Market. And it was and is a community-led market, which is all about people in the area. So it's everything from Mary O'Malley's griddle bread, scones, beetroot and apple relish, to Susan McCone's jewellery, to Jason's kindling, to Amy's stationery, to Moore's brown bread, etc., etc. And alongside that, being a woman, I was able to multitask and have more than one idea at the time. And I decided that given my long-term love affair with DIY, it was about time I practiced what they preached and set up a DIY group. So suddenly we had a really two really complementary initiatives going on, a DIY group over here, through which we managed to save some money, raise others, beg, borrow and steal a whole variety of resources and set up a community allotment. Some of that funding came from DIY. Before I worked for them, I hastened to add, looked over your terms and conditions. And the other side of it was this community market. So the market has a tea and coffee stall to raise funds for DIY. And we sell some produce, and then the DIY grows some produce, which we turn into lovely things to eat, or we sell it at the market.
I've kind of got this picture in my head, because now we've got kind of come full circle as such, but we've, what's happening? There's dancing going on. Okay. but it strikes me that when you kind of came back to England, came back from England, you got back to East Cork, the garden and the market kind of starts to get off the groove, and the bit in between where you now work for DIY is the equivalent of Noel Gallagher being the guy who tuned up the guitars for the Stone Roses to all of a sudden he's headlining Glastonbury. And you were the liaise between the Sod Show, and in fact the reason why the Sod Show ended up coming down to Waterford for your Grow Fest. So number one, you do a sterling job, and thank you. Well, thanks for the welcome, and thanks for all of the coffee. but on the other side of it, how did you go from because there's I know there are tons and tons of people involved in DIY around the country, number one, and number two, there are those who have set up wee little markets, and all of a sudden I'm looking at the female Noel Gallagher kind of standing side by side with Michael Kelly, who would have, I guess, set it up. It's a very large organisation. I mean, we've got the numbers, off Ronan already, and it's huge. So what happened there? You can't just set up an allotment to go, look at me, Mick, can I have a... what happened?
What happened next? How did the intro make? Okay, so I'm only barely able to answer that question because I'm still hung up on the female Noel Gallagher reference, but that's okay. My ego has taken a serious dent, but I'm going to move on.
It's a good compliment.
I'm way better looking than Noel Gallagher, though, let's be
Debbie
fair.
Harry.
Oh, okay. Old Debbie. Well, new Debbie Harry.
No,
young Debbie.
Debbie
Harry.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. So, I know. Tough to please. High maintenance. So basically, I was there rocking around Ladies Bridge with my crew, doing my thing with the DIY Ladies Bridge group and the Cottage Market Ladies Bridge. And I guess at heart, I am a social entrepreneur myself. And I held and hold Mick Kelly in high esteem. I have already public announced my professional crush on him. Having worked with him for 6 months, I'm going to modify that slightly now. I just think he's a cool dude. But I knew that what he has done for DIY, I wanted and want to do for the cottage market. So he could see the potential in getting people together to grow their own food, grow their own vegetables, and I see the potential in getting people within a community together to showcase their skills, say hello to their neighbours, and just together crack on. So I phoned him up and I said, hi Mr. Kelly, my name's Karen O'Donoghue and I would really like your help and advice. And being the generous man that he is, he managed to find a window in his diary, or probably Shona made him find a window in his diary. And we met and we had a big chat over coffee, more coffee.
Always
good for coffee. And he gave me some really good guidance and some really good direction. And he unofficially, I guess, mentored me over a few months. So I guess we kind of struck up a sort of professional friendship. He was... and is very admiring of what's happening in Ladies Bridge, for which I cannot take all the credit. I had the idea and put a bit of oomph behind it, and then there's a whole group of people down there that are making it happen. And, you know, Mick saw it, and he saw its potential. So that was kind of ongoing. And then alongside that, we'd be having chats about what was doing, what he was doing for DIY, and what DIY are doing, rather. Sorry. Right. And one of which, of course, is Grow HQ, which is this hugely amazing project that we are fundraising for. A 3-acre urban food garden, cookery school, cafe, new workspace for DIY, the new home of the DIY movement, actually. And these conversations were going along in parallel, and I probably at one point said, oh sure, listen, if there's anything I can ever do to help, let me know. Cue Karen, how do you fancy coming and joining us for a couple of months and being a fundraiser for DIY? And the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow. Jesus, that reminds me of the time I was in Dano's nightclub in Tipperary. I said, you should come around sometime. Jeez, wow. Daylight does strange things to the eyes. Okay, right, that's a totally different story. All right, so here's the next kind of back to serious stuff.
Oh, okay, sorry, right. Okay, sorry, serious face.
No more goofing.
Okay, right. Yes, Mr. Donovan.
Wow, geez, hold on. Okay, so... I get this a lot of the time, which is that the sun is shining, I'm making a garden, you put a photograph, it appears in a newspaper, a television magazine or something like that, and everybody goes, oh my God, it must be great to have the job that you have, that you get to be, you know, creative, and they... I'm kind of going, Jesus, if only you could see inside my head, number one. And then number two, it's a case of, you know, it must be great to work in the great outdoors all of the time. Pause. To put that, I guess, cliched question to you, for which the answer is very different in my case, 2-year-old head on my shoulders, it must be great to be working for DIY, is the question, because you get to spend all of that time growing your own. That's obviously a horseshit statement that I've just made. And is it a case of that? Well, you know, I thought it would be great, and then I actually
asked
got
me
into
it. As good as I thought it was going to be, or what's the reality check?
Well, obviously, on a daily basis, somebody's got to, you know, clean the kitchen, and somebody's got to clean the windows, and somebody's got to sweep up the front of the house. And
yeah.
It's, you know, you can't just sit in an office and draw gardens all day.
No. So here's the thing. Of course, DIY, like any organisation, social enterprise that it is, not for profit that it is, requires a huge amount of work. Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And we are really lucky to have a very dedicated, full-on, slightly bonkers, very passionate group of people behind it. And they genuinely are awesome. Like, let me put it to you this way. There is not anybody else on this planet for whom I would wear a bum bag in public. Okay? And that's probably the least I can do for DIY. So we will go to any length to get the message out there. We work really hard with very, very limited resources. And I'm not, you know, getting out the tiny fiddle here now, Peter, to do the like, oh, we're a poor charity. But we are a charity, and we do have to make do with not a huge amount of funding, public funding. We are reliant on the support of some really cool sponsors and corporate partners. And we are really reliant on our volunteers. So I know you were speaking to Ronan. He talked about the 65,000 odd people we have rock and rolling within the DIY network. And I can tell you this much, if it wasn't for our champions, our DIY champions, if it wasn't for the project coordinators, which is a really dull title for people who do amazing things, if it wasn't for all the people who subscribe to our e-zine, if it wasn't for all the people who buy the raffle tickets that we have for Dig Deep, if it wasn't for all the people who do this stuff on a voluntary basis, we couldn't do what we do. You know, we're squished like sardines into a little office space out in Arc Labs, out in Waterford, waiting for Grow HQ to come. We do what we can with what we have, and I think we do a bloody good job, especially when we've got really cool partners like Innocent and Cully and Sully and Renault and, of course, Board Bia on our side. Then we can launch some really amazing campaigns that engage loads of school kids across the country and whatnot. But no, sometimes it's tough going. And my job as a fundraiser, whilst I love it because it means I get to make phone calls to people like you, it means I get to talk to people up and down the country and find out all the great things that they're doing. Yes, there are times when I want to bang my head off the wall and say, oh, if we could just all put a few quid in the pot, this would turn around. And by we, I don't just mean the Jack and Jills and the Joe and Joannas around the country. I mean government departments. I mean corporate people with loads of money who want to get behind us and do the right thing and get behind something that is genuine and committed and passionate and professional. So it's not just a fly by night.
To be fair though, to GIY, and I mean, it genuinely is sterling work. I mean, look, you're talking to a sideshow which runs on pretty much, as we like to say it, borrowed recording equipment that we just never returned. Bernie Goldback would agree then in Tipperary. Good man yourself. Cheers, Bernie. I owe you a packet of batteries at some stage. But I mean, to be fair, the only thing that I ever disliked was, you know, somebody saying, write your name on a piece of paper and then put an amount after it. And I'm kind of going, I get to use my own ink for giving you money. You know, in short, that's called sponsoring. However, if you turn around and say, well, look, we're going to put on a series of, you know, again, to use Grow Fest as your, as it, would you call it your annual main gig? And you say to me, listen, it's going to cost you 40 quid. You can come down, you can hear the Fianna Nuálán's former guest of the sideshow, meet Dermot Carey in person.
Yeah.
You can meet Peter Donegan, you know, I know, and don't. We won't push it too far. But you've got that, and it's not, it's, for that, that doesn't feel like a fundraising thing, although it's raised that amount of money that you required. I guess in short, is there another equivalent of GrowFest that happens maybe throughout the year? And number two, how important is the support for something like GrowFest?
Okay, so taking GrowFest as an example, and the ticket sales for GrowFest for this weekend just cover the costs of this weekend. So none of the monies raised through that go back into GIY. None of them are a fundraiser for GrowHQ. It's literally just to cover costs. We don't make any profit out of this. Having the support of our sponsors is really important. We could not do the campaigns that we do without them. In terms of other key events, Bloom, it's another one, another big one in our diary. So we're looking forward to gearing up to that for 2016. And things like looking after our GIY groups and running our shop and all that kind of stuff. For that, we need people to sign up and become members of GIY.
Okay, here's the easiest one. We've got sideshow listeners, Anthony McGuinness, living in apartments. They're never going to become members. No offence, Anthony, but I know you won't. He had one plant called Planty, and I think he killed it. Planty's now gone. But if Anthony wanted to do something, what's the easiest thing for him to do? Whip out the credit card, head to GIY.com, is it? GIY.com and buy a t-shirt?
Okay, so RIP Planty, sorry for your loss, dude. I would say if Anthony wants to get behind GIY, he can A, have a look online, GIYInternational.org. He could join a group in his local area.
He's not going to do that. You just want his hard-earned cash.
Oh, right. You want me to be like hardcore black and white about it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dude, go to the shop, click on tickets, buy a book of 10 tickets for a raffle for... No, book of 3 tickets for a tenner even. Well, you can buy a book of 10 for
Can
you
buy a t-shirt?
You can totally buy a t-shirt. You can buy a book, one of our Grow Cook Eat books. You can become a member
yeah.
for 35 quid. Yeah.
Bargain.
Bargain.
How much is a t-shirt?
I don't know.
Tony, go and buy a t-shirt, mate. Do your bit for the cause. If somebody else isn't going to grow it, you know, there you go.
I'll throw in a free plant, Tony.
Oh, wow. He'll kill it and I'll have to buy another one. See if you already started. Okay, listen, from myself, in the meantime, Karen, thank you so much for your time. Being a genuine pleasure. Thank you for welcoming us down to Waterford as well.
You're very welcome, Peter. Lovely to have you here. Thank you.
Always lovely. We'll see you for a pint later.